Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, with all the talk around young people and smartphones, I'll be joined by a Dublin teacher who's made it his passion project to bring in legislation to let kids be free to be kids. I'll also be hearing about a course by the Royal Academy of Irish Music on the mind-body connection through music and sound, and Maura Rath on why yoga is for everybody. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I'm glad to say things are settling down a little bit. The transition from summer to back to school was a rocky one in our house, but we're all adjusting, especially to the arrival of secondary school to our lives. I am going to be talking more on the show, in fact, shouting from the rooftops about how the school system isn't set up for neurodivergent people and the impact that can have. But for now, we are all settling, adjusting, and I am learning everything I can about how to be the best advocate for my son. And I will share more on that soon because I know I'm not alone in that. I was away for a couple of nights in the sun with my husband for our wedding anniversary. It was his idea. And when he came to me with it, the flight times were brutal. The price of them wasn't cheap. And I was thinking about all the reasons to say no, the kids needing us, leaning on my mum for the childcare, and so much of me wanted to say no. But I said yes, yes to us, yes to him making the plan, yes to spontaneity, because do you know what? It can be hard to keep every plate spinning and our relationships can slip from time to time. And that's why it's so important that we schedule that time in. Now, okay, it doesn't have to be a weekend in Portugal. I was lucky. A lot of things fell into place to allow that to happen. But a walk, a coffee, a call with our friends, our family, our loved ones, it's essential. The impact that our relationships have on our health is huge. They can, of course, add stress or they can alleviate stress. And connection is one of our biggest human needs. So I chose to prioritise that. And I'm so glad that I did. We had a great time suiting ourselves, no one saying they were bored or hungry or that we were walking for too long, relaxing, laughing, and I would highly recommend it. And filling my own cup definitely allowed me to manage this week a whole lot better. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, as I said, there's been a huge amount of discussion around smartphone use and kids, and I don't think there's a parent in the country who doesn't see them as a new challenge to navigate, as well as a necessary evil. Owen Cleary is a teacher and assistant principal at Temple Carrig Secondary School, and he's been using what he's learned from his students to take on this topic and demand more legislation and protection. He joins me in studio now. Well, Owen, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Claire.
So tell us a little bit about you and your work and what sparked this. As I said, it really came from the classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose I've been a teacher now for 8 years and I've in the classroom that I teach a lot of SPHE and wellbeing, English and drama. And in all of the subjects I teach, it's just becoming more and more of an issue around what children are being exposed to online and the things that they wish they didn't have to see online. And then the impact that that's having on their mental health or the things that they feel they're expected to do, for example, in a sexual interaction. And it's causing them a severe level of stress and for some of them trauma because they're being harmed by what they're seeing and by the people that they're interacting with if they're unlucky.
And this is sort of a flip on it because all of those discussions now are sort of about us, the parents or the gatekeepers, the caregivers, and how can we instill this on them? But this is coming from them themselves. They are struggling with what they're viewing.
Yeah, I suppose over the last couple of years, I have seen a shift in that. Like a couple of years ago, if I said to them, how would you feel if we banned all social media or if we took your phones away? They'd be like, no way, you can't do that. It's my human right to have a phone. And they're right. They have a right to access the information online that we do. But I suppose I asked my third years this week because I knew I was coming on to chat to you. If nobody had one, when do they think they should get one? And they all said, I don't want one. If nobody had one, I don't want one. The only reason I want one is because everyone else has one. And then I said, well, when would you like one? And they said, some of the stuff I've seen, I don't want to see it until I'm an adult. And then some of them said, actually, some of the stuff I've seen, I don't understand why anyone in the world would want to see it. I don't understand why this is even something that people out in the world would like to see at any age. And I suppose they're talking about severe levels of violence. When I asked them what were the things that they don't want to see anymore online or that they feel they should be protected from, the most common thing they said was, I just don't want to see anybody dying on my feed anymore. I don't want to see people being killed. I don't want to see people being beheaded. I don't want to see porn. I don't want people sending porn to me. I don't want people asking me to send them explicit images of me. And just on that, I know that last year, to the Irish regulator alone, there were over 4,322 websites reported for having self-generated images of child sex abuse material uploaded to them. And so that's all children under the age of 18. And of that, 53% of them were between the age of 8 and 12. Like, we cannot ask parents to police this anymore, and we cannot ask children to regulate their own use of social media. We've got to make sure that the government puts legislation in place to put the responsibility on the people who are responsible for causing the harm to our young people, and that's the internet service providers and the social media companies.
And something that sort of is in the air is that, like, the horse is already bolted. This can't be policed, this can be managed, but that's not true.
No, of course it's not true. I mean, look, we've done it with cigarettes, we've done it with alcohol, we've done it with cars, we've done it with the banking system. If you can regulate banking or cryptocurrencies online, you can absolutely regulate what young people are seeing. And look, we're not talking about stopping adults from doing anything. Once you're an adult, you can do whatever you want online. That's not what we're concerned about. We just need to make sure that our children have the best possible chance of getting through their childhood and their adolescence without the serious mental health crises and the seriously negative impact that it's having on expectations that they have around so many aspects of their life, from how they're meant to behave with each other, how men are meant to behave, what it is to be a man, what it is to be a woman, what you're supposed to look like. And then, most worryingly for me and the work I do with the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, what they feel their sexual expectations are because of the amount of porn that they're seeing through their smart devices. It's not just smartphones. We need to be really careful about that. It's any device that has access to the internet.
And another big change has been that you don't have to seek out this information. You don't necessarily have to put something into a search engine and be led there, or, you know, become a fan of a particular site. This comes and finds you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of the algorithms that are being used by the internet service providers and the social media companies, as soon as the internet realizes you're a teen boy or a teen girl, it floods you with content that your parents or that other adults don't see, because they want to... Facebook knew for 2 years, because of the whistleblower that came out from Facebook, we know that Meta knew that for 2 years they were flooding girls' feeds with eating disorder promoting content. And they knew that it was causing them damage. They knew that it increased their levels of anxiety and depression, and obviously their increased risk of developing an eating disorder. Yet they did it anyway, because it kept the girls scrolling, and it kept because their market research showed that this is the kind of thing that gets girls clicking on content online.
And I was covering Lunchtime Live here on News Talk recently, and there was an ex-employee of TikTok, and he was talking about the algorithm showing young boys more aggressive and misogynistic content than it is to girls, whether they like it or not. And all of the research is coming back to say any more than 3 hours of time on social media has a massive detrimental impact on your mental health, as well as being exposed to violent imagery, highly sexualized imagery. It does desensitize, because we're watching in a very passive way in many ways with the scroll, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose there's a couple of things you've named there. First of all, yeah, if you spend more than 3 hours a day online, the Surgeon General in the US commissioned a huge piece of research to show that your levels of anxiety and depression double. And not only that, there was a study done in 2019 in Ireland by UCD of 19,000 adolescents, which showed the same thing, that if you spend over 3 hours a day online, your risk of experiencing anxiety or depression goes through the roof. it's not just desensitizing. Just to talk about porn for a minute, because it's the thing that concerns me most at the moment and the impact that it's having on our young people. It's not just desensitizing them to what they're seeing. It's also conditioning them in terms of what they feel is expected of them. And we have a window to do something about this now. But if we and legislate for it and make sure that government knows that we are mandating them to legislate to protect our children online. But if we don't, there's a window closing. Or my fear is that the window for opportunity is closing, whereby soon sex won't be, we won't allow young people to figure out what sex is for them anymore. The window is closing whereby soon sex will just become sexual violence because of what they're seeing on porn. 88% of the most popular porn content online includes physical acts of violence, and that doesn't include verbal violence or threatened violence. It's just physical acts of violence, with an average of 11 physical acts of violence per 10-minute scene. There is no question as to why young people are terrified to become adults in this world when that's what they feel is normal. That's what they think they're growing up to experience.
So what do we do with all of this? I'm always really conscious, you know, as a parent myself, when you sit and listen to this, you know, it's overwhelming, it's frightening, it's scary. What do we do with this information?
Yeah, I suppose, and that's really important to say, and I'm not on here to first of all, not to vilify any young people for what they're doing online. It's not their responsibility to protect themselves, and also not to shame any parents for not protecting their children more. We are way beyond that. It can no longer be a parent's responsibility to do this. It has to be government. So with regards to what parents can do now, it's about making sure that their local politician knows that we have to legislate to protect children online, and we have to put that responsibility at the feet of the people who are doing the damage. And that's, there is right now, the things that are happening, there are crimes being perpetrated on children online every single day, just in my classroom alone. And if I was responsible for those crimes, I'd go to prison. But right now, there is no law that holds anybody accountable for those crimes that are being perpetrated. There are victims of those crimes, but no perpetrator, because there's a loophole in the law. So we have to make sure that government closes that gap and implements legislation to put responsibility on the people who are doing the damage, and that's the social media companies and the internet service providers. And it's possible. The solutions are there. They just need to legislate for it. So what I would say to parents is, get onto your local government representative, get onto your local politician and say, this is number one for me. If you want to be in government next year, you've got to promise to put this into your manifesto for the election.
And tell us about the initiative then, Gen Free, Free to Be Kids.
Yeah, so Gen Free, there's a website, www.genfree.ie. And what we've done there is, it's just a step-by-step guide of how you can email your local, all of the ministers, all of the government representatives and your local representatives as well, to just tell them to include our three asks in their manifesto for the election. And that includes specific and effective legislation to create a safe online space for children to engage in, supports for parents and the schools that are grappling with the mental health crisis that we're seeing, as well as an embedded digital media literacy into the education system. It can't be left for an hour of SPHE once a year anymore, or an add-on module in transition year. It has to be something that the entire education system is built on, because our young people have the right and need to learn how to become the future digital citizens that are going to exist in this virtual universe. And so this idea of banning them from social media and banning all smartphones from schools, I can see why it's happening, and it's a positive short-term step, but in the long term, we've got to equip them with the skills they're going to need to deal with everything that they are going to have to deal with when they do become adults. But in the meantime, we need to make sure that they're protected when they go online, so that they can gain the skills that they need and not be at risk of any of the harms that are out there.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about the smartphone ban across primary and now possibly secondary schools. And I think as parents and caregivers, quite often we're just looking to take the phone away as often as we can, be it from their bedrooms at night or to reduce the amount of time they are online. But, you know, there needs to be a shift in focus. You're right to know that online life is a part of life, and we need to be making sure that we understand how best to manage and navigate that and arm our kids with that.
Absolutely. Again, this is not about taking all responsibility off parents either. Parents have a huge role to play here. For example, children probably shouldn't have their phones in bed with them at night, every night. And we know because of CyberSafe Kids report that over 80% of 8 to 12 year olds currently have no bedroom restrictions on their phone. Like, who else do you allow into your bed every night with your child? And you let them, you let the entire internet have access to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's absolutely still the responsibility of parents to decide when it's appropriate to allow your child online or to give them online access. But it has to be a responsibility, the responsibility for creating a safe online space for when you do decide that it's appropriate for your child to go online has to lie with government and has to be implemented through legislation.
And can I ask you finally, because you've been working with kids for a long time now, and I know you've worked in all different types of communities, and you managed to meet kids at their level and get them to open up to you. What's your advice to parents? Because that can be that can be hard. You know, we go in and we're all full of good intentions, but it can be hard to manage that parent teen particularly relationship where they're trying to get autonomy and you're trying to protect them. So what's your advice around communication and language that we use with kids?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is difficult, but it's. I remember the first time that we were looking at the expectations that my students in transition year had based on their gender. So what do you feel is expected of you in a romantic relationship, or what do you feel is expected of you when it comes to having sex with somebody because you're a man or because you're a woman? And the list that they made were so explicit. I said, well, hang on a second. Are your parents teaching you these things, or are your teachers teaching you these things? Because they're the people tasked with teaching you about sex in Ireland. And they all laughed and said no. And I said, well, where is it coming from? And one boy put up his hand and said, can I be honest, sir? And I said, yeah, of course. That's the whole point. And he said, porn. And I remember that moment, all eyes in the room, watching my every facial expression. Because I suppose they are so afraid of being judged. There is an inherited shame and guilt around some of this stuff that I know I experienced in my upbringing. And it's really important in that moment when your child comes to you and says, I've seen something online, or can I talk to you about something, or I'm not comfortable about this thing that's going on. It's so important that I know as parents, the instinct is to go, give me the phone, take it away. I don't want you ever seeing that. But we've got to try and be mindful for just that split second where we decide, I'm going to show them that I am not, I know I'm not the expert in this. I have not lived their life. They're the expert, and I need to show curiosity more than anything else. I need to be non-judgmental. Don't judge them for what they've seen, and just be really curious. And the first question out of our minds has to be, okay, thanks so much for telling me. What's that like? That's totally different from my experience. Tell me more about what that's like. And then the child or the teen at least knows that you're open to learning about them and you're placing them in the position of expertise. And that's all I do in the classroom. It'd be totally inappropriate for me to come into a classroom and start talking about sex and porn to the students. But once they feel that there's a space that they can talk about it free from judgment, and there's an adult in the room that knows what they're talking about, or that can at least facilitate them in just expressing how they feel, then the conversation takes off, and all I have to do is guide them through it.
And I really learned that from you, because you go in gentle. You go in with, what's the worst thing you've seen online?
Yeah.
What have you learned about sex on your phone? And it's a curiosity and it's a conversation, and you could be absolutely dying inside and angry, but turn that fire into getting behind this campaign and pushing for legislation, because it isn't just down to the young people and the parents and the caregivers to sort this out. For more information, go to genfree.ie. Owen Cleary, thank you so much for what you're doing. Much appreciated, and thank you for coming on.
Not at all. Thank you, Claire.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, we've spoken on the show before about the power of music for our well-being, the COVID care concerts comes to mind, I still often think of the woman who had been silent in the nursing home for 6 years and then suddenly said, "What beautiful music." And not so long ago, we had Dr. Shane Cassidy on about neurologic music therapy, both worth a listen back. But the Royal Irish Academy of Music have a new course entitled Music for Wellness. And to talk a little bit more about what's involved, I'm joined now by Brendan Breslin, Head of Junior Adult and Lifelong Learning at the Royal Irish Academy of Music, and Emma West, a sound therapist, a static dance DJ and shamanic practicer based in Dublin. Well, you are both very welcome.
Hello.
And Brendan, this is not the first course you've run in this vein.
It's not, no. So in 2022, we launched our adult division, which was really going back to our strategic cores. And one of that's obviously inclusion for us, very important. And these were courses for professionals and non-professionals, basically opening up for anybody that wanted to engage in music, perform music, appreciate it, or be affected by it. And as a result of that, one of the I suppose the offsets of that was we wanted to focus in on the wellness piece, self-care, mindfulness, and all of that large gambit of space. So one of the courses that we started with was a well-sing choir. And I think when we started in 22, we had some 20 people. And just now in the September, we have 101 in our program of well-sing. And it's really opened up a space for us that is really about, again, that self-care, but where music has evolved and has a different role in society. Whereas we used to use it for appreciation and what it would do as a pastime, people are now using it as that psychological, cognitive, social aspect, and has real deep and powerful impact as a result.
Because I'm always quite conscious of the language that we use around certain modalities, like the healing power of music. And yet I did in the introduction mention two incredible guests who have come on the show and really opened my eyes more to that. And I think we all know music has the power to change our mood. We can get lost in music on a dance floor. There is huge power in music. And Dr. Shane Cassidy that I mentioned there, you know, he's talking about accessing areas of the brain to help people's cognitive function, because even in dementia, you may forget many things, but you won't forget the words to your favourite song.
Yeah, absolutely. I've as a professional musician, I've played music for 22 years now, and I suppose in a kind of a roundabout way, I've seen the impact, or so I thought, you know, as the performer on a stage or on a dance hall or on a floor. But it wasn't until 2019 where I went to a seminar in Trinity as part of a collaborative piece with the Academy, and we saw a presentation to do with music and dementia and the powerful impact of how music can actually affect people with that cognitive change. And it was demonstrated very clearly by, I'll never forget seeing this lady and the impact to her, who basically could no longer connect with her family. And over a period of time, through listening to music from her childhood, was able to reconnect. And some months later, she was actually back at a piano, playing the piano again, which she wasn't able to do for maybe 10, 15 years previous. And that was the power of music. So actually a fundamental display that clarified for everybody in the room that actually it's more than just that pastime or the thing that you stick on Spotify. It has a deep and powerful impact for everybody.
And tell us a bit about your work then, Emma. I have had you on the show before, but remind people a little bit. You had started out in the DJ world, so you've always really felt drawn to music and known the power of music. And when did it change to this different type of sound?
Yeah, so as a child, I was always at home, kind of in listening to music. It was my safe space for me. My dad worked in radio, so I was always kind of brought into the studios, back probably when you could, you know. Always given the daggers for like maybe moving the chair at the wrong time if he was on air. For me, sound has always been something that I've been connected to. So sound bath healing or sound bathing is a form of meditation using sound and frequencies and vibrations that can really just help you relax your mind and body.
And there's a huge demand now. You're up and down the country packing and unpacking your car with all of your gongs and instruments, because society it's an always on culture, and we need ways to de-stress, to go from red to green, from fight or flight to rest and digest. And people can struggle with mindfulness and meditation and lying still. And that's where the sound bath comes in, because you're almost distracted or brought back to the present moment by each instrument.
Yeah, and it's a completely passive practice. You know, I always say there's nothing you need to do when you get to a sound bath. And I should say for anybody who hasn't done one before or hasn't heard about one, there's no water involved. It's the kind of sound bath word was coined because you're essentially bathed in the sound vibrations, because I still get asked, and it's so funny that sometimes I'm like, how do people not know yet? But like, some, it's still so new to people, you know. But it is a completely passive practice. There's nothing they need to do, just allow themselves to relax, which I know is easier said than done. But again, the sounds is something that they can focus on if they don't want to do the traditional meditation. But yeah, it works by brain entrainment. So it really just helps to slow down the brainwave state. So, you know, if we're in that state of fight or flight, our brains are constantly on go, and the frequencies and vibrations from the bowls and the Tibetan bowls and the crystal bowls, and particularly the gongs, because they're very low frequencies, that the brain just synchronizes up with those external factors that they're being exposed to.
And you will float out the door, I guarantee it. And things like the Tibetan bowls, Brendan, have been around for thousands and thousands of years. And when you think back to the beginnings of music and some of the things that we really need for our well-being, such as community and coming together, and you think of chanting and drumming, this is really going back to our roots and what we need as a human to thrive.
It's going back fundamentally to the art of sound and what sound was used for and has been used for. Over a period of time, it turned into this expression of, I suppose, a pastime or a treat or a hobby. But it's much more than that. It's deeply rooted in something that is fundamental. It's within all of our souls, so to speak. So it goes back to, and we talk about this often, you know, if you think about the original, you know, classical, Western classical musicians didn't necessarily use sheet music, for example. It was all about improvisation, which means it was sound that they were immersed in. And I think the ownership of that and the impact of that is then deeply rooted within each individual as a result. I love the fact that it's very subjective, because you could have a group of people within the same room experiencing the same sound, but it will mean something different to each individual as a result, which is, there's a true ownership then of that. And I think that's a very powerful piece.
So tell us a bit about the upcoming course.
So the course is coming up very, very soon, actually, and we only have a few spaces left, I'm glad to say. So we're starting on Saturday the 19th mm-hmm. of October. And when we were talking about, you know, what was the best space for this to happen in the academy, we have this beautiful building now on Westland Row. And at the very top of it, we have this beautiful library that on Saturdays we'll have some of our junior students in there. But we've managed to create a space between 1 and 2 o'clock, just after lunch, or at lunchtime, for Emma to go in and really create a, and I think it's very beautiful that it's going to be in the library. There's something very contemplative and meditative, and there's a kind of a Zen feeling about being in the library, I think. So I think it's going to be the first time that we're going to have a regular pattern of music or sound in the library within the academy, which is kind of stark to say for a library which isn't a music academy. But I think it's brilliant that this will be the first time that there'll be something really planted into the library. It's a really exciting moment.
This is giving me all the feels. How is it going to work? People are going to arrive to this Zen library, and what's going to happen?
Yeah, so it's a 6-week block, and each week we'll be doing different instruments. So we'll be focusing on particular instruments over each week. And it's really an exploratory session for them. It's an hour long. They'll arrive in. They just need to bring a yoga mat, a blanket, if they can. And it's about 40 minutes sound bath, and then we'll finish off with herbal teas and a little chat about maybe how their experience was. And I just think it'll be really interesting to see how everybody responds differently each week to the different instruments, because they all hold so many different frequencies, and depending on what your mind and body needs in that time, you'll respond differently to each one. So I think that's going to be really interesting.
So usually when you're doing a sound bath, you have a collection of all of your instruments and you get exposed to a little bit of every one, whereas this time you're kind of separating them all out week by week.
Yeah, primarily it will be focused mainly on, so let's say the first week will be Tibetan bowls. And I have a lot of them, but I might just dot in one or two things that will just kind of complement them, rather than it just being all Tibetan bowls, you know, particularly with the crystal bowls as well. Maybe I might just dot in one or two different things as well, just to complement that too. But yes, you're right. I do have a lot of instruments. And I tend to bring to my regular sound baths, I tend to bring more than what I need, because everyone's like, oh my God, did you play all them? And I was like, no, but I like to be in flow when I'm playing. So I don't like to be too rigid. I like to have choice. I don't ever go into a sound bath thinking this is what I'm going to go with. And because then I stay in my head, you know, I like to have that time to just feel what the group needs in that time and just go with the flow.
And your voice, one of your most beautiful instruments. I've noticed in my last two, you haven't been singing as much. I'd like to see that come back. Perhaps Brendan can get you for the next course to include a singing session. You have some instruments, though. I'm not going to make you sing now. Great. Can you give us a sample? Tell us what you brought. Yeah.
So I brought one Tibetan bowl. So these are made up of seven different metals. They're very rich in overtones. There is other ones that are practitioner bowls as well, that when I do one-to-one sessions, which I haven't been doing at the recently because I've been just so kind of busy doing the group work. And I'll just play them if anybody who's listening would like to just close their eyes for 2 seconds, 3 seconds. And you might be able to hear, maybe the mic won't pick it up, but it's not one fundamental note. There are a few different notes going on in that one. And then I did bring a crystal ball with me as well. So people might be familiar with the usual kind of white crystal bowls, they're frosted. But I have alchemy bowls with me today, which are infused with pure gemstones as well. So they're really special. These are a brand called Crystal Tones. I'm hoping that you can hear them. That one's a bit better.
And the thing with the sound, and obviously we are in the room with these instruments, you're not just hearing them with your ears, you're feeling it in your body.
Yes, water is a great conductor for sound. So if you think about our bodies made up of 70% water, so there is a physical aspect to this as well. It can really help with blood flow, circulation. Often in sound baths, people might say, I felt like tingling in my body as well. And that is just getting the blood flowing. So it isn't just about the mind and relaxing the mind. There is a physical aspect to this as well.
So Brendan, a few spots left. Who do you think should come to a course like this?
I think it's really for anybody. And, you know, as I'm sat here listening to the sounds, it's fascinating that typically for human beings, when we hear a sound, we try and understand it. So the brain is trying to figure out what it's just heard. But with sounds like this, the body doesn't react in the same way. It just allows that to almost seep inside. So it doesn't try to overstate or understate or try and understand or investigate the sound. So from that perspective, it's really for anybody, I would say. We have lots of parents who come in with their kids on a Saturday into the academy, and I'm hoping many of them will go and take an hour of their day and just spend some time in a different experience. For anybody that does want to sign up to it, and you don't have to be a student of the academy, it's an open door for this one. They can just go to riam.ie/shortcourses, and they'll see all of the courses there, which includes this wonderful opportunity for anybody to come in and experience what's going to be a great opportunity, I think.
Well, if you've never sound bathed before, I would highly, highly recommend it. And yes, let's just reiterate, you are fully clothed. In fact, you're wrapped in a blanket. Brendan Breslin from the Royal Irish Academy of Music and sound therapist Emma West. Thank you so, so much for coming on. And you will find out more again on that course at riam.ie/shortcourses. And for more on Emma's work, go to emmawest.ie.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, having established herself in the wellness world during the pandemic, Maura Rath leads a series of online classes as well as in-person retreats dedicated to helping others to build mental strength through their practice. She is also passionate about sharing the message that you don't need to look a certain way to practice yoga. She launched her business, Yoga with Maura, and spent 9 of the 12 weeks vying for investment from Alan Sugar on The Apprentice. And I'm delighted to say that Maura Rath, the founder of Yoga with Maura, joins me in studio now. Maura, you're very welcome.
Thank you so much for having me in, Claire. Delighted to be here.
And what an incredible journey you've been on so far. And you started out in yoga during what everybody has, a stressful, busy job, and it was your chill out at the end of a tough day.
Absolutely. Honestly, it was my escapism, and it was the first time I feel like in my life that I got out of my head and I got into my body. Now, it took me a while. It took me a lot of perseverance and kind of finding the right teacher. But when I found the right teacher, I was like, one day in a class, had this moment at the end. I was like, I think I want to do this. I think I want to bring this back to Ireland. I was living abroad at the time. And then it just kind of snowballed from there.
And the thing about yoga is, I mean, people just get this idea in their head. It can be intimidating, can't it? That you're supposed to be this particular kind of person to be able to do yoga. And
absolutely,
that's not true.
And like when I started yoga, I was like, okay, I need to get myself, you know, leggings, this, you know, and I would think that a certain type of girl is just doing yoga. But actually, for me, it was so much more than that. And it did take until I did my yoga training in India. Like, I love the escapism. I'd feel like really almost high after it, light, forget my worries for that time. But for me, really, it's about realizing that we all need it. And I always say to people, if you don't enjoy yoga, keep shopping for a new yoga teacher, because there's a teacher for everyone. And for me, it was that one teacher that changed it for me in New Zealand, a lovely, lovely teacher called Lizzie. And she just opened the world to me. And I feel like I brought my own style to it. It's quite a contemporary practice that I teach, and I just try and make it really accessible.
And that's the thing. There are so many different styles of yoga and so many different types of teachers. That it's like what they say about therapy, don't they? If you don't click with your therapist, find another one. And it's the same with yoga teachers. And I don't think that gets discussed enough either.
No, it doesn't. And it probably does within the industry. So I feel like we're talking about it a bit. But I'm like, you know what? It depends on what you need. And it's really interesting. You often need the yoga pose that you're avoiding the most. So if you're someone that, you know, you're at the desk or you're holding on to a lot of tension or stress, you probably need to open your heart and you probably avoid doing those postures. Or you go to a class and a teacher is teaching all this open heart stuff and it makes you uncomfortable, but maybe you need to push into the little bit of uncomfort. Uncomfort, is that even a word? Discomfort, before we get comfortable.
And people will often say as well, is yoga enough? Because we're kind of sold this. You've got to be hammering it out in the gym and you've got to be doing CrossFit, high rocks, running marathons, hiking mountains, that it's go, go, go. We don't really celebrate the gentle strength as such.
Yeah, and like it's really interesting. And this is a little debate that I love to have. Like, I believe that any kind of movement is enough. I don't believe that you should just do yoga. I don't believe that you should just do swimming. Now, I mostly just do yoga. I also do a little bit of gym. I also do a little bit of running and I tap in and out of it. But for me, yoga is my practice. So yoga is so much more than the postures. Being a yogi is being comfortable with yourself, being at peace, being joyful. So if you're joyful running every day, that's your yoga. So yoga is about coming together with people, but also it's about having calm. Like the asanas, the postures that you see in a class, is only one little part of yoga. It's this whole story. Sometimes it can be a little bit mixed up with religion, but it's definitely not. It's about how you treat yourself, how you treat others. So people are like, what? Yoga is running? I'm like, no, if that is your yoga, that is your peace, that's calm. I mean, I believe everyone should stretch. I feel like it's injury prevention. It is looking after your body from head to toe. So what I'm trying to say is, to answer your question in a very roundabout way, Claire, is that yes, you can do yoga and be perfectly healthy and strong, but also running is good, the gym is good, movement is medicine.
And it's that coming out of your head and into your body piece that I think people underestimate, because we're so focused on, will it tone me up? Will it, you know, help me get stronger? Instead of just really focusing on the idea that you come in and your head is full of your to-do list, and by the end of it, you're relaxed on the mat and you're breathing and you've really only been focusing on moving your body. And you're right, that can happen in the gym, that can happen on a run, and people forget that. And it's the only thing about yoga is that's different is sometimes it's an invitation to slow down. Sometimes I'll notice that everything I'm doing is go, go, go.
Yeah.
And it's that slower movement that we all need to slow down.
I know. And we're in this world, like I'm guilty myself, where everything's 5 seconds, everything's quick, everything's fast. We're like, go, 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 go. So you're like, I don't have time to slow down. But really, it's what you probably need the most. But I say to people, sometimes just 5 minutes, get up, do a couple cat cows in the morning. you know, the thoughts of you going into a yoga class for an hour or 75 minutes might be giving you stress because you're like, I haven't got time. But if you actually just take 5 minutes, I'm not really advertising my business here by saying that, am I? But honestly, if you take 5 minutes to stretch, you'll feel the benefits from it. But also just a little thing that you said there about, you know, toning weight. This is like the diet culture that we're all poisoned by. I'm poisoned by. I catch myself on a weekly basis on my Instagram trying to get my best, you know, side or holding my tummy, all these ridiculous things that I'm trying to really let go of and work away from. But yoga just gives you confidence in your body, gives you that peace. And just the fact that you're here, your heart is beating, is just such a gift. And I think that little practices like yoga can remind you of that.
And I was at a beautiful event that you held down in Deerstone in Wicklow.
And the most amazing retreat centre ever.
And like, it was so gorgeous down there. But the sun shone for you, a deer pottered by. I mean, it was all go. You were bringing all the energies in.
That was a very special day. Honestly, I host retreats and I host them in abroad. I have some in Greece next week and I have a few in Deerstone coming and a few all around Europe and places. And it's so funny, retreats just work out well for me. Deers pop up, the sun shines, it's a special time. And I always say to people, you know, if you're not sure about, like, if you need a break, you know, you go on holidays sometimes and you just go and you come back and need another holiday. Well, a retreat, you experience a little retreat day, imagining that for a week or even a weekend, it's really special.
Yeah, no, I'll have to get on one of your Greek retreats for sure.
Yeah.
And you were talking in the retreat about that and you were saying, look, I'm passionate about letting people know that yoga's for everybody. I don't think I look like a typical yogi, you said. You know, I'm soft in places in my body. And it's interesting even that you brought that up, because you're right. We are poisoned by this diet culture that you're supposed to look a certain way. I mean, you look fit, strong, healthy, fabulous. But it does cloud our judgment and cloud everything, especially when it comes to our health, our wellness and our fitness.
Absolutely. And I just think it's so interesting. Like, I don't know if you know Laura Dowling, we were chatting about this, and, you know, people with bigger bodies come to my yoga classes. And I just think that we get so, like, in our head that you can't do something if you're not a certain size. I am soft, but I am very aware that I am slim as well. So I'm all about, you know, being able to work with your body in your yoga practice. And if there's something that you can do that can help you feel more flexible, that can help you feel stronger, but can help you feel at home in your body. I feel like a lot of us are on the go. We're going from one appointment to the next, from one job to the next. And we don't just stop, be grateful, have a moment and just live.
Yeah, agreed. And when you left Ireland to go traveling, you were working in the corporate world.
Yeah.
And then when you came back, you were like, I'm going to train in yoga. So what was that transition like for you personally, and what did the people around you think?
Well, people around me probably thought I was a bit mad. My friends and family have always been supportive, but they all were like, what is more happening? So what actually happened, I was traveling for about 6-7 years, and I'm on my travels on the way back, I stopped in India and I was like, right, I'm going to be a yoga teacher. I'm going to do this. Went there and I was like, maybe I'll teach a little yoga class on the side. I'll do a 200 hours, which is a month. Ended up staying for 3 months, doing my 500 hours. And I left India being like, I don't need money. I don't need anything. All I need is my yoga practice. Then I moved back to Ireland, got a little reality check. Moved to Dublin, you know, trying to pay rent. So it's been a real journey. But I had this vision, and I'm such a manifester, that one day I would be able to spread yoga around Ireland. I really feel like I have. I've made it accessible. I feel like I have, like, tomorrow I have a sunrise yoga session. I do these once a month. They're free for community. And like the last time I did one, this guy, he could have been in his 70s, just randomly joined the session. There's a couple of hundred people there. And he came up to me after me and he said, oh, I was just out for a walk. I seen people walking, so I decided to follow them. He put his jacket on the grass and just joined in. Like, that is for me. I was like, you've actually made my whole year telling me that, you know? And I just feel like I'm getting the word out there. You know, in some of my classes, you don't have to get the perfect posture. It's how you feel, how you breathe. And it's just really amazing.
And obviously there is the business side of it. As you say, you know, you've bills to pay and you've set up this business, Yoga with Maura, and it caught the attention of The Apprentice. So tell us a little bit about that experience.
Oh God, I'm traumatized from it, Claire. Jeez. No, honestly, I just got this mad notion. And this is a little battle I have. You know, yoga is about giving to people, but also I'm living in Dublin in 2024, trying to survive. So the business side is hard. So long story short, I was looking for investment and I have like big plans. My online studio has been going so well, but I really want to take it global. And so I just got a notion, applied to be on The Apprentice, and I just got a feeling. I was like, I'm going to get it. I said it to my husband. He was like, what? How do you know? And I was like, I just know. Went through a few interviews, a lot of maybe 3 months of interviews, and then filmed it last year. And it was just really, really, I never really watched The Apprentice, which was a gift and a curse all at once. I realized after about 5 minutes in there, this is a TV show. This is not really for investment. It is for investment. Someone gets investment, but really it's just for entertainment. So I battled it out for 9 weeks. I'm a bit competitive as well. And after the 9th week, it wasn't meant to be, and came back to Ireland. And it did help my business. I didn't get investment, but it definitely did help me get some yogis around the place.
And the thing is, when I was reading one of your interviews when you came out, and I actually met someone else recently who had left the process because, like you, they found the structure of the day way too much. I mean, you're up early in the morning, you're gone. You couldn't even practice yoga. The irony of it all, that this is what keeps you going. Yeah. So healthy eating, sleep, all of that sort of stuff kind of goes out the window for long, long filming days. And that's very hard, personally.
Yeah. And it was a toxic environment. And like the people that were part of the show, like everyone was there. And you know, all the other contestants, we were all going through it together. But, you know, we were kept up till like 2 a.m. We didn't know the time. Then we were woken up at like 4 a.m. for filming. All day you're standing around. You're only really fed sugar. It's all part of it. Everyone's stressful. Like I asked, I was like, listen, can I just be woken up 10 minutes before? If I just do my stretch and meditation, all is good. And I was told, no, that's an advantage. So, you know, I've been practicing yoga for nearly 12 years daily, and then suddenly it's taken away from you and they're like, oh, you can do it on your down day, which was once a week. That's not how yoga works. Well, it's not how it works for me. It's daily. It's my ritual. It's like having my cereal in the morning, my stretches. Like it makes me have energy, build my business, be a good person. So that was taken from me, and you know, it really tested me, and I've never been so grateful to get back on Irish soil when I got home, Claire.
Amazing. Well, look, you can hear in your voice the passion you have, the plans you have, and I've no doubt you'll make whatever you have in your vision come to life. There are plenty of things coming up for Maura. She has her online classes, her retreats that she mentioned, as well as her weekly sunrise session. For more, go to yogawithmaura.ie. Maura Rath, thank you so much for
Claire,
coming on.
Claire, so grateful and so lovely to have you. See you on your mat soon.
And for more on what Maura has coming up, go to yogawithmaura.ie. So that is it from Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey. Thank you to Simon Keane and Hugo De Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thank you to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.